Are you ready to go to the feast? I choose those words carefully to really think about it. Are you ready to go to the feast? Are you? We use phrases in our vernacular that can sometimes cheapen what God instructs. I've done it, you know, times in conversation. I'm not saying it's a sin to say a phrase, but to really think, all right, are you ready to go to the feast? Is that all we're doing? No, we have transportation, trying to get there, get back. But simply saying go to the feast takes away what God commands. What term does God use? Turn over to Leviticus chapter 23. Think about especially of travel, getting ready to go to the Feast of Tabernacles. It's usually one of those top things we think of, you know, are you ready to go? Yeah, we're ready to go, but what's the phrase God uses? Leviticus chapter 23, we'll begin in verse 33. We've led up through atonement, ready for the Feast of Tabernacles. Verse 33 of chapter 23 of Leviticus. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of this seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days to the Lord. Again, the reminder, who owns these days? To the Lord. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. For 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. On the eighth day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. Many times again, who it's to the Lord. It is a sacred assembly, and you shall do no customary work on it. Interesting, verse 37 and 38 kind of give a summary of all the festivals again in the midst of the Feast of Tabernacles. These are the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, to offer an offering made by fire to the Lord, a burnt offering and a grain offering, a sacrifice and drink offering, everything on its day, besides the Sabbaths of the Lord, besides your gifts, besides all your vows, and besides all your freewill offerings, which you give to the Lord. Keep getting reminded who this is for, who we come before, and what we do. Verse 39, we see again after this summary of the Feast of the Lord. Verse 39, and on the 15th day of the seventh month, comes back to the Feast of Tabernacles again, when you have gathered in the fruit of your land, you shall go to the feast for 7 days. Now, what your Bible says, it's important, again, what's the phrase God uses? You shall keep the feast of the Lord for 7 days. On the first day, there shall be a Sabbath rest, and on the eighth day, a Sabbath rest. Again, the reminder, the eighth day is not a heading home, not a packing up day, getting out of town. The Sabbath rest. Again, this reminder. Be ready to keep the feast of the Lord. This phrase is used here and many times throughout these verses. Verse 40. And you shall take of yourselves on the first day the fruit of the beautiful trees, branches of palm trees, the boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. And we come back to the phrase in verse 41, you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. Reminded, you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord. And these days belong to God, not to the United Church of God, not to any individual. These days belong to God, and we keep them to God. Think of the Feast of Tabernacles mentioned and emphasized. You shall keep the Feast of the Lord for 7 days. This emphasis is used here in verse 39 and verse 41. It goes through the dwelling in booths. Verse 42, you shall dwell in booths for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths, temporary dwellings, when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So Moses declared to the children of Israel the feasts of the Lord. Went through the emphasis of who these days belong to and who we come before. We see a specific emphasis here of you shall keep the feast of the Lord for 7 days. This afternoon, we're going to look at the importance of really being ready to keep the feast. Title of this sermon, Ready to Keep the Feast. Ready to keep the feast. It's not ready to go. Again, that's part of it. We got the travel, getting ready, but it's not just, okay, we go and then we just wait, do nothing. We are going to keep the feast. Ready to keep the feast of God. This word keep that's used here in both of these verses is a verb meaning to hold a feast, a pilgrim feast, to celebrate a holy day. Always love that commentaries that will say the holy day. No, it's God's holy days. See, everywhere this mentioned, they're God's days. Word that it says is used usually in the context of rejoicing and describes festive attitudes and actions, often while on the way to worship or when worshiping a feast, God's festivals. The word indicates the holding or observing of a festival. And I wish they just put it in there, holding God's festivals. They're his days. So we think of this importance that's there. Turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 12. Brings us to an important principle. As we prepare to keep the feast, some have already traveled on their way at those locations. Good friend of mine down in Florida is already down there. What a couple friends sending me texts, we're on our way. It's like, quit rubbing it in. I didn't say that, except for now. Deuteronomy 12, verse 17. You may not eat within your gates the tithe of your grain or your new wine or your oil or the first things of your herd or your flock. Of any of your offerings which you vow or your freewill offerings or of the heave offerings of your hand. But you must eat it, the tithe, this mention here specifically of the second tithe, before the Lord your God in the place which the Lord your God chooses, you and your son and your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, and the Levite who is within your gates. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God in all to which you put your hands. It's rejoicing that keeps coming up, and this keeping it to the Lord. See this reminder, can you keep the feast at home? Turn over to chapter 14. Deuteronomy chapter 14 and verse 23. And put a bookmark here. We'll be back here at least one more time. Deuteronomy 14, verse 23. And you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide. Tithe of your grain and of your new wine, your oil, the firstling of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. In the place where he chooses to make his name abide. He chooses is not our homes. I think we're to go up to where it is shown. Deuteronomy 16 and verse 15. Another one of these reminders, because it's an important phrase. Go to keep the feast. It's one that I'll mention here in a bit. Deuteronomy 16 and verse 15. Midst of the Feast of Tabernacles reviewed, it begins in verse 13, verse 15. 7 days you shall keep a sacred feast to the Lord your God in the place which the Lord chooses, because the Lord your God will bless you in all your produce and all the work of your hands, so that you surely rejoice. Think of this importance, where God places his name. 7 days you shall keep a sacred feast to the Lord your God in the place which the Lord chooses. I like our website where hopefully it was with care and concern of the choice of words that was used. There are people that aren't able to go. health difficulties, and this year we see that even more, where people have COVID, other things that keep them from going to the feast. God doesn't say, well, if you have a contagious disease, well, go and just spread it. There's this quarantine laws that are there that we see with throughout Leviticus and other places. We think of this importance. Our website actually has it titled Celebrating the Feast at Home. Celebrating the Feast at Home. You do everything you can, try to celebrate it. It's not the same because God's command is to keep it where his name is put, where he shows. And you cannot keep the feast at home. But you can celebrate it. You can try to make the best of what you have. Think of these reminders in our life. Because again, that key phrase, don't forget it. Something that God uses very carefully, how you keep his feast. Again, we can do our best, and there's been many times people have had it. This week I've had several say I had to cancel my plans, and I'm just such a heavy heart hearing it, and this is the first time I'm ever going to miss the feast. And it's like they can do what they can to have the webcast, but it's still not that keeping same way, and they know it. I've talked to them or texted and emailed going through. It's like, it's not the same. Anyone who's ever had to miss the feast because of health difficulties or a loved one dying near the feast. We had my grandpa died several days before the Feast of Tabernacles and made it difficult. Think of several other reasons that take place. But again, the importance, there are reasons a person can't be at the feast. Health issues, contagious diseases, as we see this year. COVID has been hitting this area more than ever. But there are also wrong reasons. Not convenient for me. Not going to risk losing my job. I need to get my harvest in. I'm afraid. I don't want to go. Many reasons that God doesn't give for keeping, skipping his feast. And those reminders. I find it interesting because as you look at so many of the pagan religions of the world, which most will call Christianity today, it's the opposite. God gives us the command to go keep my feast at his location where he places his name. And yet, what do the pagan religions do? Bring evergreen trees into your home. Have your Easter ham in your home. Do things at home. God's command for his festivals, especially as we see the Feast of Tabernacles, is to keep it where he places his name. Travels involved, going up to keep the feast. This importance of wording that's used here, in the two places, or these two words, keep and feast, only occur in just eight places together, and every single one of them deals with a festival of God. Look at a handful of these. Exodus chapter 12. Actually, we're going to look at all of them. Exodus chapter 12. There's only eight. We've already looked at two of them in Leviticus 23. God doesn't just choose words. Well, you know, this is good enough. You know, keep, I guess, we'll go with that word, and feast. Look at this importance of these two words together. This word feast isn't a complicated word. It's a noun meaning a feast, a festival. Exodus 12 and verse 14. Here we have Passover. Exodus 12 and verse 14. So this day, referring to the Passover and the instructions give it, shall be to you a memorial, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance. We see Passover. Passover is not to be kept at home. Now, there again are reasons where health difficulties can't be there, but you think we go up to keep the Feast of Passover together as a congregation. We come together. See this reminder here in Passover, again, a festival of God. Not a holy day, but it is a festival of God where we come up to keep it together. Leviticus is the next place we just looked at. Turn over to Numbers chapter 29. I love word searches and seeing the richness and digging into certain words. Gives it full meaning. Numbers chapter 29. See Passover mentioned specifically in Exodus. We see the Feast of Tabernacles in Leviticus. Numbers chapter 29. If it's been a while, chapter 28 and 29 are a great study. Sometimes I've heard people kind of, well, you know, I go to the Feast of Tabernacles, I'll go on the Holy Convocation, I'll go on the first day, and then I'll go on the last great day. But, you know, during the week, if there's sightseeing, things I want to do, it's perfectly fine. Interesting, you look at all of the offerings mentioned, and each day through the Feast of Tabernacles, it keeps increasing in the offerings, and how it keeps going through the whole week, all 7 days, and then you get to the last great day. Very interesting study. We see here in chapter 29, verse 12, on the 15th day of the seventh month, here's again the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work, and you shall keep a feast to the Lord 7 days. Here on, it's interesting how, keep looking at how it keeps increasing each day. None of the other festivals do this. Think of this importance of God's feast, to keep the feast. Turn over to Nahum. Nahum. When's the last time we've been to Nahum? Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, if that helps. It helps me. I even cheated and put a page number in there. Nahum. We see this emphasis here before we get to the last place we find these two words together. Nahum chapter 1 and verse 15. You see God's wrath on his enemies throughout this chapter. Nahum 1 and verse 15. Behold on the mountains the feet of him who brings good tidings, who proclaims peace. Start to look at the gospel message. That peace that is pointing to God's peace, God's future, what ultimately comes, especially with the millennium. O Judah, keep your appointed feasts. Perform your vows, for the wicked one shall no more pass through you. He is utterly cut off. Seems to be pointing especially to the millennium. You think of this reminder. O Judah, keep your appointed feasts. Plural. It applies to Passover, see it ultimately to all the God's festivals, to keep them, to be prepared for them, to be ready to keep them, exactly how God has commanded. The final one here in Zechariah 14, the one we think of, the one that I hear people in the world, even relatives who grew up in the church, used to be in the church. Well, you know, the Feast of Tabernacles, it's that just old stuff. We're a new covenant. Like, all right, well, how do you explain then that it's kept in the future? Okay, so God's like, oh, I like the feast early on. Yeah, in the 21st century, that's just, yeah, we don't need it then. But yeah, then when we get to the millennium, Christ's return, then let's go with it again. Makes no sense. Zechariah chapter 14, verse 16 will begin. And it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem, again, the future event, Christ's return, those who fought against Jesus Christ and his saints, shall go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to whichever days they want to follow him, they'll follow him, whichever's convenient. No. They will worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be that whichever of the families of the earth do not come up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, on them there will be no rain. There are penalties for not following God. Think, oh, no big deal. I just don't feel like doing the feast this year. I'm worried. I'm scared. It's just not going to work into my schedule this year. There are blessings, there are cursings. Not my laws, It's God's laws. I think in the future, it'll be a reminder. How many times? You got to go. If you don't, you're not going to get rain. Whatever, I'm not going to go to the feast. Then they find out. Rain doesn't come. Verse 18, if the family of Egypt will not come up and enter in, they shall have no rain. They shall receive the plague with which the Lord strikes the nations who do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And this emphasis to keep, three times it's used. The third one here in this four verses, verse 19, this shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations that do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Three times, again, this emphasis to go up to keep the feast. We've seen in Leviticus and other places where God has placed his name. These future events that, again, emphasize it's not going to change. I start to think of the logistics. How will this work? I have no idea, but God has it perfectly in line. The whole world will go up to Jerusalem. The world going to get a little off kilter. You think God doesn't know how to do these things? His command, go up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Same as it is today, where God has placed his name. This phrase wasn't lost in the New Testament. Turn over to Acts chapter 18. Acts chapter 18. Paul talking here, turns to Antioch, chapter 18 and verse 21. Now let's read verse 20. It begins the sentence, although with Paul, you sometimes got to go five verses before you begin a sentence. Verse 20, when they asked him to stay a longer time with them, he did not consent, but took leave of them, saying, I must by all means keep this coming feast in Jerusalem, but I will return again to you, God willing. And he sailed from Ephesus. This time it appears there was other places you could keep the feast. God's name was in other places as we have today. You look at Pewaukee, you look at Steamboat Springs, you look at all these places God has placed his name this year. This one was very specific. Paul's like, well, I wanted to be... If everything works perfectly, I must by all means keep this coming feast in Jerusalem. I want to be at Jerusalem. It was still at that point where God had placed his name. This emphasis here, and as I love the New Testament, you then see this word in the Greek word here for keep, is to make, to do, expressing action, either as completed or continued. You're going up to keep the feast. You're in the middle of the feast, you're still keeping it. Finish some of the days, you keep keeping the feast. Keep keeping the feast. I'm sure that's in there somewhere. It's interesting, this word keep is only used three times in the Greek. This word feast is just what we saw in the Hebrews, meaning feast, festival of God. But these two words together, keep and feast, as we looked in the Old Testament, it's only found in three locations. Read this one. Turn back to John chapter 2. The other two are found in John. It's fun digging into these two verses, these two sections. John chapter 2. John chapter 2 and verse 23. Now when he, Jesus Christ, was in Jerusalem at the Passover, during the feast, many believed in his name when they saw the signs which he did. Jesus Christ at Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. This word did is the same word that we've been looking at for keep. Things that he did, here we see very specifically, saw the signs that he did. You think it didn't stand out when he got up and gave a verse, talked in the temple, well, here's what Feast of Passover is really symbolized, and wow, look at what he's showing, the signs of miracles, the signs of pointing to scriptures. Oh, that makes perfect sense. I've never heard anyone describe it that way before. It's things that he did, action. This word did, again, is the same word for keep. Think of ready to go up and do the Feast of Tabernacles. Keep it. This action that's required. We see in the chapter 4, verse 45, the third place, these three words are found together. And to really think about this phrase that's used here, we'll begin here in verse 43, John 4, verse 43. Now, after the 2 days, he departed from there and went to Galilee, and Jesus himself testified that a prophet has no honor in his own country. So when he came to Galilee, the Galileans received him. Having seen all the things he did in Jerusalem at the feast. For they also had gone to the feast. Did this hit others? Others that, no, I've got too much harvesting to do. I'm not going to make it up this year. And to hear neighbors coming back and Jesus Christ did what? What kind of miracles? What was the sermon he gave? What was the message that you heard from him? Only the ones who went up to keep the feast saw what he did. An interesting verse that's kind of an easy one to read over. Again, he did things at the feast. Here we think of this emphasis and this reminder, for they also had gone to the feast. If they didn't go keep the feast, they would not have seen what Jesus Christ had done. This word did is that same emphasis, this same word for keep. Again, referring to Jesus Christ's actions, what he did. Do you think that Jesus Christ went to Unleavened Bread, Feast of Tabernacles? Oh, boy, this is a great vacation for me. I'm just glad to kick back and they want me to heal. No, I'm on vacation. Let me take it. The Feast of Tabernacles is not a vacation. Jesus Christ did things. He helped. He was there to serve. He gave messages. You think about, wow, that was deep. I never thought about that verse in Isaiah. Oh, that makes perfect sense. But only the ones who went up to keep the feast heard it. Others heard it through other people, but only the people who saw it and heard it with their own ears and eyes were the ones who saw it. Interesting verse, and where only three times keep and feast are mentioned together is these two Greek words. You had to go to God's feast day to see what Jesus Christ did. Miracles, teaching. Why? Because Jesus Christ was not saying, I'm too busy this feast. I'm going to stay home. I'm exhausted. Multitudes around me all the time. God will understand if I just don't go this year. Or maybe, as we know, 1 year, they're ready to kill me. Well, that's a good year to be scared, stay home. I'm not going to die. And yet Christ still went up to keep the feast. Think of this emphasis here. 12 days ago on trumpets, only those who were in LaPorte driving home saw the miracle of God. Mention it on announcements, on atonement. I want to reiterate it. You think of only those who were driving home from LaPorte, who had gone up to keep the Feast of Trumpets, saw God's miracle as they drove home. Weather forecast that morning, severe thunderstorms, tornadoes were to hit around 4 to 5 p.m. right after services as we were to leave. I looked at the radar that morning. I'm always thinking about you guys as everyone's traveling. I'm like, oh, if it doesn't hit, God, please help protect us. And it had this long band coming down off Lake Michigan straight down to LaPorte. And it was so wide, it was like covering both Elkhart and Munster area. I was like, oh, we're going to keep the feast, and here we're going to get hit with this. Again, as we looked at that going home, and we're heading out, loading things into the van, I'm like, well, it's probably pouring, so let's go get things out. A little bit of drizzle here or there, but there was no rain, especially not anything severe. One commented, driving home, Mr. Flom, he was looking at the radar, dark red, driving straight through it, and no rain. I looked at the radar later, and it literally parted around and went on both sides. And even as some were driving through red, solid areas that should have been terrible storms and at least heavy downpouring rain, very little rain at all. But only those who went to keep the Feast of Trumpets saw the miracle. And then you can look at the other side, well, why didn't God just protect us from COVID? Why don't we have to keep the Feast of Trumpets and then we're still in Satan's world. God allowed it for a reason, maybe to see how we're doing, but through that midst of it, he still gave us this incredible miracle to remind us, I'm still here, yeah. I think God didn't know, yeah, COVID will probably hit quite a few, but I'm still here for you. Don't forget about me. Think of this through the years and go through, and again, we see God's teachings and miracles. I remember one Sabbath in Munster, probably 8 or 9 years, I couldn't think of the date. I know it was back in our other facility, back when we were in the gym. I remember we were through Sabbath services and thunder, hard rain just started coming down. I remember we were worried the sound was going to go out. Nothing took place there, but it was just pouring down rain. Thunder, whether there was tornadoes, we didn't know. I remember one specific lady getting up, leaving during services. Talked to her later after church. After church, for those who stayed, the rain stopped and no problems going home. We still had an hour drive home, no problems, no complications. I talked to the lady later and she had a terrible time getting home. Got banged up the car, got in part of a wreck, trying to get back to her place. And I told her, Thelma, if you had stayed to the end of the holy convocation, there would have been no storm. Whether she heard or not, we still had the storm through services, but going home, we were protected. But those who stayed for God's holy convocation saw the miracle. Those who kept it. We think of this word, this feast. Sometimes we also think of another one. I'll mention 1 Corinthians 5, verse 8. One of the first places, well, keep the feast is mentioned here. It's unleavened bread. We're not too far. Let's turn over there. 1 Corinthians 5. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 8. Well, we see these two words together, but in the Greek, it's just one. It could be read, therefore, keep, or therefore, the feast. But we see this phrase that's used, therefore, let us keep the feast. The phrase here, let us keep the feast, is one Greek word, meaning keep the feast, or just feast as this emphasis is here. Let us feast. Let us feast together. Could have, but we see translations put in, keep the feast is still accurate. Bread, we think of, let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Well, you love to use this one. Well, the feast days, we don't use them anymore. Well, that doesn't explain this. We're to keep it. Again, understand what God's true meaning behind these days shows. We see this importance to keep the feast, to keep it, and how God shows. Well, again, it aches our heart when we have to see some cancel hotel reservations because of COVID, legitimate reasons that I had a heavy heart through the week, and you could hear it in their voice or in the emails of, I had to cancel it, and it was the first time I've ever had to cancel. Praying and hopeful that God heals, and then hopefully they can at least have a portion of the feast to go up to keep. Close feast site, be able to see some, be up there. Again, those that are weak, contagious, obviously staying home and not able to go. It's a terrible feeling as those who've ever had to miss a feast. I still haven't so far. But those that I've talked to through the years of, oh, it was a terrible year. You try to do everything you can to celebrate at home. It's just not the same. Right? Hopefully it doesn't occur another year. But we see this year many people that won't be able to because of sickness, illness, being still contagious, still weak and exhausted. Think of how important it is to keep the feast, how valuable it is. And even as we go to keep the feast, how it still pulls at the heart of knowing, oh, Betty's still home. Oh, Loretta's still home. Oh, you miss them. You wish they were able to be there. We keep praying for their complete healing. Turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 14. If you had your place held there, ahead of me. Deuteronomy chapter 14, because we see so much through this reminder of what it is to keep. What is this emphasis of what we do, these actions, as we see Christ doing things at God's festivals? Deuteronomy 14. We see one of them we already read here. Verse 23 of Deuteronomy 14, and you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide. The tithe of your grain and your new wine and your oil is the first things of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. This reminder, even through fearful times, of learning, all right, it's difficult, but God, yours, that's where I put my trust, and you're telling me to go keep the feast. Last year, we had a few handful of people that came back afterwards with COVID. Still a bit of rejoice through the feast, but came back and had it. Thankfully, got over it and back to 100% now. We think of this reminder, they still went. Learning, all right, God, my life is in your hands. Help me to trust you in everything I do. Or we've read, I think it was in the offertory, the verse in Exodus that I love, that as you go up, the enemies will not even covet your land. They won't even want to break into your homes. They won't even, and yet the evidence is there. You've asked neighbors for us, you know, take care of the dog, take care of our pets. They have the perfect opportunity. Yeah, they're gone a whole week. We could take things out of there. God's saying they're not even going to desire it. And it takes total trust in God. To fear God is this phrase that's used here. To learn to fear. This awe and respect. God's days are perfect. If he says to go keep it, then I'll give up whatever is needed to keep God's feast. I want to be there. I long for it. And that learning to fear the Lord your God always. We think of that importance. And we see as the instructions through this section, dropping down to verse 26. We think of the second tithe and what it's to be used for, and you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep, or wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires. You shall eat there before the Lord your God. But why? Why is this instruction to eat whatever your heart desires? Obviously, again, within reason, we're not gorging ourselves, but we think of special meals. Oh, I've always wanted to try this. And why? Well, God wants us to get fat. He wants us to be unhealthy. No, sometimes it can feel that way because it feels like, especially midway through the feast, I'm like, do we really have to eat another meal? And so I'm so full. And so I was like, oh, but why? The end of this verse 26, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. This emphasis of eating to the full, not stuffing ourselves, but eating rich things as we've gone through in the past. You know, oxen was rare. You don't eat oxen. It was your tractor. It's what pulled the plow. You never ate an ox. And so at the feast of, Oh, I'd like to order an ox. I've always wanted to. Fine piece of meat. I don't know if it's that great compared to others. But God's specifically saying, for oxen or sheep, you don't have to get something that you've never tried before. You can, whatever your heart desires. We think of this importance as we are to rejoice before God with our household. This rejoice that is used over and over and over with God's festivals. And I say this because it's listed as a command. It's something that we are to rejoice. And you think this year it may be tougher. Because I just know the past 12 days now and how much my heart, so-and-so is hit with this. And now hearing Aurora has got another 5 days now of quarantine. It's like, gosh, she may miss part of the beginning of the feast. We are going up to keep it, but we know there's many that will be left behind that are still going through quarantine, sicknesses, difficulties. And it does make it difficult at times to keep them in our prayers, to be remembering them. But we are told to rejoice before the Lord your God, where God has placed his name. This word rejoice here in verse 26 is a verb. Now, this is a shocker. It means to rejoice. Also means to be joyful, to be glad. Again, can be difficult. There's been other years. The year my grandpa died, my parents had to stay behind because no one was left behind to help grandma. And here she just buried her husband. Oh, yeah, sorry, we got to go. Bye. Other family members, oh, we'll stay right beside you the whole time. And they were nowhere to be seen. Mom and dad's, well, we put you on a plane and sent me off to go keep the feast. But they kept, stayed behind to help. Worst feast they've ever had because they couldn't keep it. They tried to celebrate whatever you can. For me, it was being there, but keeping them in mind, my grandma in mind, what they were all going through, the heartache. You're still trying to rejoice the best you can, but it's just pulling your heart. Still see the heartache in this world all around us. We're reminded God wants us to rejoice, and it can be difficult. Certain years can be terrible to try to. I know people have lost spouses. Oh, I'm going to go to the feast no matter what. And it's a tough year, the first year without your spouse at the feast. Trying to rejoice and celebrate as much as possible. Turn over to Nehemiah chapter 8. This emphasis is used here. Nehemiah chapter 8. Cover some of these in the opening night sermon in Pewaukee. Great section. This whole chapter, this whole book, it's awesome. Nehemiah chapter 8. Begin in verse 9. As they're reading the book of the law each day, begins on the Feast of Trumpets in verse 2, the first day of the seventh month, and this excitement to learn more, to hear it. Well, as you're hearing more of God's word, here they're coming back from captivity of, oh, now we remember why we went into captivity. I've been doing that wrong. Oh, no. You start to think about how it hits your heart. You're like, oh, no, I didn't do that right. Oh, no. And you see this emphasis here, Nehemiah chapter 8 and verse 9. And Nehemiah, who was the governor, Ezra the priest and scribe, and the Levites who taught the people, said to all the people, this day is holy to the Lord your God. Still likely a reference to verse 2, the Feast of Trumpets, which covers most of these first several verses. This day is holy to the Lord your God. Do not mourn nor weep, for all the people wept when they heard the words of the law. How many years it had been since they heard it? In captivity to hear, oh, I forgot all about it. It used to be called the Feast of Tabernacles. We haven't kept it for so long. Oh, I remember that. I remember that instruction. And then all the instructions of, oh, I haven't been doing that. You start to be sorrowful. Oh, I don't want to do that again. But it's interesting in this section there, don't weep, don't mourn. There'll be a time for this after the feast. And I love that in chapter 9. They wait 2 days after the last great day, and they're fasting and drawing close to God. Help us to overcome. They didn't, well, you know, I'm rejoicing now. God just wants me to forget my sins. Repent of them, but you don't dwell on it. If you think of this emphasis, it took time 2 days after the last great day to fast and pray about it. Help me to get back in line with your ways. As they were mournful to see what they were not doing right, the instruction, no, you're to rejoice. Don't let this get you down right now. Verse 10, then he said to them, go your way, eat the fat, drink the sweet. And it goes back to eating whatever your heart desires. The good food, eat those things to rejoice, and send portions to those for whom nothing is prepared. For this day is holy to our Lord. Do not sorrow, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. How do you get through a feast when there is sorrow? We're reminded here. Joy of the Lord is your strength. What are the days picturing? We're not in the millennium. I know, a huge shock. This world is Satan's. I'm sick and tired of Satan's world. I'm sick and tired of his diseases, all of his tactics, how he wants to kill every single one of us. We long for God's kingdom on this earth. Jesus Christ, King of Kings and Lord of Lords, starts to, when you're going through tough times, you can hardly wait for that time. God's kingdom is not now. How the churches in this world say God's kingdom is now. What are you thinking? This is the kingdom now? I want no part of it. It's not God's kingdom. You picture that time of the millennium ushering in the kingdom of God following. You think of how precious that time is going to be and why we're told to rejoice at the Feast of Tabernacles, because it pictures that time when we will be rejoicing. And hopefully at that time we'll be spirit beings, but we'll be caring and serving humans who are finally seeing God's laws for the first time. Oh, that's why I've been going through curses and excited to learn. We think of this importance and this instruction of don't mourn, and it can be difficult at years. Doesn't mean, oh, you can never mourn. Your spouse dies before the feast. Oh, you can't cry during the feast. No, it's just try not to dwell on it so much. Keep remembering the joy of what the days represent. And again, this emphasis, do not sorrow, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. That's where your strength comes from. It comes from God's joy, his plan in our life. Verse 11, so the Levites quieted all the people, saying, be still, for the day is holy. Do not be grieved. And all the people went their way to eat and drink, to send portions and rejoice greatly, because they understood the words that were declared them. Doesn't mean don't repent. See a sin that's happening. I overcome this. Please forgive me. Help me, God, every step of the way. This mourning that was taking place of this is why we went into captivity. That's why I'm seeing all these curses. God's saying, rejoice. And I love how the people listen. They did exactly what God said. All the people went their way to eat and drink, to celebrate, to remember what they were there for, to send portions and rejoice greatly because they understood the words that were declared to them. They had open ears. They were listening and desired to follow God with their whole heart, mind, and soul. This emphasis of there. Think of joy, excitement. Turn over to James chapter 1. It's one of those that's kind of hard to picture. Every time I read this, you know, I think of those with COVID right now, some that are going through a very difficult time. Even those that don't have too many symptoms, but they're still under quarantine and had to cancel reservations and just, the heartache. No, I want to go keep the feast. James chapter 1 and verse 2. James 1 and verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. mean, count it all joy when you get COVID. Count it all joy when you go through difficulties, trials, tribulations. This word joy here means gladness, the cause or occasion of joy. The cause or occasion of joy in trials, during tough times, during COVID, during quarantine, I had to cancel flight. I had to cancel my hotel reservations. I'm going to have joy. This joy that is mentioned here doesn't end the sentence. Count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. You know, God tests the heart to see, well, are we, oh, good, I'm glad I don't have to go to the feast this year. God sees the heart. You may not ever say it out loud. People at church never find out, I really didn't want to go. You think God doesn't see it? You see, when you're crying and you're, oh, I had to cancel reservations, you think God doesn't see that? Doesn't, I want you to be able to rejoice extra next year, or maybe be able to be there for the end of the feast and at least be able to get a portion of it. We think of that joy, that God's still with us every step of the way. He tests us to go through trials, tribulations. You think of that reminder to continue to not give up, to continue to remember why we are on this earth, what God's calling is in our life, why we can still celebrate at home as much as we can, webcast, phone for those who can't make it. It's not the same, but you still, I keep picturing what this future holds, what I am longing for. When COVID, what was that going to be like? Will it be halfway through the millennium? What point are we going to be able to, I have to explain what COVID is to someone? Everyone knows what COVID is now. When will we, I have to explain what cancer was. What's cancer? I've never heard of cancer. What kind of a future in God's world of all these evil diseases of Satan? Well, yeah, we went through people that had just get eaten up with cancer. They went through this. They went through that. It was Satan's world. We want no part of it. Think of the joy of God's future kingdom to come and how we long for it. Turn back to Leviticus 23. Or I should have had you hold your place there. Think about these verses that again remind us we're to keep the feast. Instructions that we see here, Leviticus 23. Verse 39 again. And on the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of your land, you shall keep the feast of the Lord for 7 days. On the first day there shall be a Sabbath rest, and on the eighth day a solemn rest. You shall take for yourselves on the first day the fruit of the beautiful trees, branches of palm trees, the boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. You shall rejoice. Several years ago, we went through this phrase, you shall, throughout the Ten Commandments, you shall not lie, you shall not commit adultery, and all those you shall not. Here's the you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days, going to where he places his name. These temporary dwellings that are mentioned, verse 41, you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. You shall dwell in booths for 7 days. These instructions, this word for booths, is the Hebrew word, sukkah, means temporary dwellings. Don't go make a tent. We don't go in the backyard. We go to where God places his name. We see these instructions. Had nice hotels, but they're never the same as being home. Pillows, even though you're in your own. But you think of it's not the same. It's temporary. We think of these temporary dwellings, tents, tabernacles, other translations have. Why, again, it's called the Feast of Tabernacles, temporary dwellings. Feast of Booths, other translations have. You think of, again, it's temporary. We're temporary. Our bodies are temporary. No, I'm going to live forever. I'll avoid this. I'll never die. How does that work? Think of temporary. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 10. Actually, chapter 11, sorry. Hebrews 11. The men and women of faith understood this. Jesus Christ understood his temporary dwelling. Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11, we'll begin in verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would afterward receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. Talk about faith. I don't know where I'm going. God tells me I'm going to do what God says. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob looked to New Jerusalem just as we are looking to New Jerusalem. And New Jerusalem takes place after the last great day. You think of all of God's festivals as they continue to go past the last great day. Ultimately, New Jerusalem coming down where the Father will dwell with men. Think of this emphasis, temporary dwellings. This world is a temporary dwelling. Our bodies are temporary dwellings. We're not living for eternity in these bodies. That seventh trump will be changed in a twinkling of an eye. The same of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Sarah, verse 11, by faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. These all died in faith. None of them thought, well, I'll get through this year. Bad year for going to the feast. I'll skip it and I'll make sure I preserve my life. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. They had God's holy days that continued to point to God's future. What they long for. Verse 14, for those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they have called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. God's preparation of New Jerusalem, something we long to see coming to this earth. Think of that future and what God's perfect plan shows. Turn finally to Isaiah chapter 2. There's so many great millennial verses that lead up to what takes place at New Jerusalem. One of my favorite, along with all the others. Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah 2, begin in verse 1. The word that Isaiah, the son of Amoz, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, top of all the other governments, the kingdoms of this world. One, it shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. Word flow to it, actually stream to it. Start picturing, you know, I get tired of coming in this area, coming to church, not to come to church, but how congested it is. What will it be like We obviously wouldn't be able to be in here. People streaming to get to church. The millennium people, what are the halls going to be like? What will God's areas, they're going to come and I want to learn. They're going to stream. They're going to flow to it. Verse 3, many people shall come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. There'll be an understanding. I don't want to hear about Christmas. It is pagan. I don't want to learn their ways. I want to learn God's ways. God's ways are perfect. He will teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, the one the world says you don't need it. Christian churches of this world say you do not need God's law. They are not following Jesus Christ. God's church follows God's laws that show perfectly what God's love is. John 5, verse 3. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations and shall rebuke many people. It's not, hey, you're all good the way you are. Come on in. Happy to have more. We're just growing. Let's go. Come on in. They'll be rebuking. Oh, you don't just come in your old attire. You come in your best. You're coming before God. You don't come at any time of the year. You come at his appointed feast. You come at his Sabbath days. There will be rebuking. It'll be in love. Hopefully that, oh, I didn't realize. Thanks for telling me. I've got to change. He shall judge between the nations and shall rebuke many people. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. It's one of those verses we read so many times, but to really think about. Not learning war. Nation will not lift up sword against nation. What will that be like? There's always turmoil. People are fighting about everything. They're always wanting this or that, and they're going after things. And God, no, here's God's truth. Here's why you had conflict. Here's what God's truth is. And that desire to follow God's ways. You start to see some of the turmoil in verse 5 that leads up before that time period. We see from verse 1 through 4, God's millennial setting. When God's kingdom comes. How perfect that time is. How exciting that time is. Why we rejoice at the millennium. What will it be like? We're thinking about that a lot growing up in the church and leaving school. I talked to one of my friends this past week and he didn't have much of a comment, but he said, oh, what you been doing? I said, well, I'm getting ready to keep the feast. Remember when I used to have to leave school where everyone probably thought I was weird? Most of them, by the time I was in high school, they knew, well, that's just what he does. Didn't have any comment, but I said, well, that's what I'm getting ready to do right now. I'm ready to keep the feast. Can hardly wait. You think of that time where this world will be longing to keep the feast. Learn God's ways. Let me put that into practice. Let me live it. We see a difference as it goes into verse 5. O house of Jacob, come and let us walk in the light of the Lord. But going in darkness, walk in the light of the Lord. For you, talking of God's people, have forsaken your people, the house of Jacob, because they are filled with eastern ways. They are soothsayers like the Philistines, and they are pleased with the children of foreigners. Going completely after idolatry. Interesting phrases that are used. I've never seen a time in our society of America where eastern ways are so prevalent. Feng Shui, you hear it on every home and garden. Well, you just have to position the couch so the spirits come through. Angels of God don't have to worry about your couches. It's demons that are being filtered through your house. So I don't care what they think of how my living room should be positioned. I don't care about demon philosophies. But these are Eastern ways. Same with yoga. Oh no, don't touch yoga. That's what I do. Nothing wrong with stretching. It's called Pilates. You type in and Google yoga. It is a religion. It's a religion. You turn towards the, well, I don't do the worshiping of the sun, but it's okay to do everything else. You think of these Eastern ways and how much they're creeping in and just flooding. Oh, you see, I remember last time I was at a bookstore, you look, whole section on feng shui and all these Eastern mysticisms. It's becoming more and more prevalent, more and more demonic. Soothsaying, you know, let me tell you your fortune. Let me tell you what the future holds. I don't need to. God's word shows me what my future holds. It's in his kingdom. I don't want any part of Satan's world. We think of how much of these ways are continuing. Well, this is just Israel's time. This doesn't affect us now. We're in the 21st century after. Verse 7, their land is also full of silver and gold, and there is no end to their treasures. Their land is also full of horses, and there is no end to their chariots. Warfare, horses are okay. I know we've got people who love horses. There's no end to their chariots. Their land is also full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. People bow down, each man humbles himself. Therefore, do not forgive them. God forsaking his people, because they don't want forgiveness. They're not turning to God. Well, you know, it's fine if we put in a tree in the house. After all, we'll throw Christ's name on it. It's all good. Yet we have God's perfect plan. And what we see from verses 1 through 4, the excitement of the future when they'll learn God's ways, his truth, his laws. Oh, that makes sense. We think and are reminded of the Feast of Tabernacles and the future that we long for. A time why we're told to rejoice because of the rejoicing that will take place when that is finally revealed. Even in the midst of heartache, we see people that may not be able to go because of difficulties, health difficulties. We think of this future we long for and we're told to rejoice. Not just told, we're commanded, rejoice. They're my festivals. Don't forget how important they are. Many will be leaving tomorrow, maybe on Monday. Will we be ready? And not just going to the feast. Not just, we'll go. Well, what happens when we get there? I don't know. I just got here. I just was supposed to go to the feast. Reminded. It isn't just a destination, but we see what we learn from it. Let's be ready to keep God's feast.